This is February the 10th in the year 2001, and this is Bob Gilgore interviewing Clementine Self at her home at 210 Broad Street. Good morning, Clem.
Good morning, Bob.
How are you this morning?
Great.
Good. You look great, especially with that mother on your chest. It tells who you are, in part. I'll begin this morning with a very broad question, and that is, what was it like growing up in the Chapel Hill?
I guess some people would say that I probably lived a very sheltered life growing up in Chapel Hill, because the things that I experienced with my family were not necessarily very negative things. I lived, and you said earlier that we were poor. Well, we never knew we were poor. I lived across the street from the principal of the high school.
Mr. and Mrs. McDougal.
I had two teachers living on my street, Lillian Cannon, and then at that time she was Lillian Robinson. Miss Lampley lived at the top of the hill. So we lived on the street with who we thought were the best and the richest in Chapel Hill. So I never knew I was poor. Both of my parents worked. And there were only two of us, so I never felt like I was in need of anything. So whatever I received, I always had everything I needed. So I never knew that I was poor. We were a sense of community on North Graham Street. Everybody's mother looked after each other. Our neighbors were like our sisters and brothers, and we just had a big sense of family. So some of the experiences that other people have experienced, I never experienced. I became involved in the civil rights movement when it came through Chapel Hill with James Farmer and some other people who, Quentin Baker, when they came through Chapel Hill, and I really got involved with that. I was never arrested, because my father thought that if I got arrested, he'd lose his job at the Carolina Inn. So I'd do all the sit-ins, I'd go to all of the meetings, all of the church meetings, but when the police came to arrest us, I would always move so that I wouldn't actually go to jail. One night, we just did a sit-in at the jail, and so I did do that, but I was never actually arrested. The thing that I remember about Chapel Hill in terms of segregation was at Belk, when it was on Franklin Street, they had a white water fountain and a black water fountain and a white restroom and a black restroom. Well, I've always been rather nervy, and I'd always go in the white restroom. People would look at me strange, and I'd speak and use the restroom that said white. I never did the colored water fountain or the colored bathroom. I was always kind of brazen, I guess. So those things didn't bother me. My parents, we didn't do the movie scene. I don't ever remember going to the movie, so even when we were sitting in at the Carolina Theater, I had not actually experienced going to the movies, so I didn't have the experience of sitting upstairs in the balcony. So I can't relate to those kinds of activities, because we never did. I was never allowed to do that. And that's why I said earlier, I think I lived a rather sheltered life, because I didn't do some of the things that many people in Chapel Hill probably did. Through the civil rights movement, I felt encouraged when it was time to integrate the schools, that I would be one of the ones that would do that. As I said earlier, there were eight of us, and the eight of us that made a decision, and many of them were my neighbors.
Who influenced you to make that decision?
Well, some of the people who were involved in the civil rights movement, when we found out that the school board was encouraging, you know, said they didn't, you know, if you could go to school of choice, then some of the people who were actually involved in the civil rights movement during that time were asking if we could get if they could get volunteers who'd be willing to do that.
Who were the people involved?
Quentin Baker, I remember Reverend Lavert Taylor, and just James Farmer came through two or three times. Those were just the people that I basically remember.
So these were black leaders.
Right.
Some of whom were local?
No, they weren't local.
They weren't local.
They were not local.
Outside.
They were all outside.
And they outside. What about your minister? Did your minister try to influence you?
Reverend Manley at that time was my minister, and he did mention, you know, from the pulpit that the school board had agreed that people could have a school of choice. And it was more my friends. We more or less got together as a group. Gene Hines, Deborah Fashee, myself, Laverl Peace. We more or less kind of talked to each other because we all lived in the neighborhood, you know, around each other. And we just got together and said, let's do it.
Let's move from that back to your childhood. I'm interested in knowing what your parents were like.
Well, my parents were very caring and loving and hardworking parents. My father was at one time a carpenter. He had his own business, he and his father and brother. And then in later years, because, you know, carpenters can't work very much during the winter time, he decided to become a bellhop at the Carolina Inn. And so he worked at the Carolina Inn. We always had fun as a family. We did all our things, you know, as a family type thing. We would be at my grandparents who, as I said, my grandfather was an independent carpenter, and my grandmother was always at home. Same thing with my mother's parents. My grandfather worked and my grandmother was at home, and then in later years she went out to work, but my father's mother never worked except at home, and we raised our own produce. And we had our own milk and butter that we sold every Saturday.
How did you manage to raise your own produce and have your own milk and butter?
Well, we just, that's what we did. That's
you,
what
you had a large area?
We have a large tract of land, and that's what we did. I mean, that's the life that I knew was, you know, getting the crops in and...
Was that your grandparents who had the crops?
My grandparents and my father helped them. So, but we did most of the farming on their land.
They lived out in the country.
Right. Out off of Damascus Church Road. Okay. That's where they lived. And so they had their cows. So we churned butter, and churned the milk, and made the butter. And on Saturday we came to town to sell it. And we had eggs and that kind of thing. So... that's more the life that I lived, and it was always around family.
So all these chores were done with other people working
right,
at the same time.
At the same time.
And you're just copying them in a way.
Right, right. We all worked together. We raised our own pigs and had our own pork. And so, you know, that's what we did.
Did your mother work?
My mother worked. She worked at the University Laundry. And then in later years, she became an employee of the Chappie Carver City School System as a homeschool coordinator. She worked for a while as a teacher assistant at Sewell Elementary when it was first opened. And then after she left Sewell, she became a homeschool coordinator. And that role was to sort of like the social worker of today. The family specialists that we have in the school system, where they work with the families to to get children to school, get their glasses, get their dental work done, make sure parents can come to parent conferences and that kind of thing.
Did your mother and your father graduate from high school?
My mother graduated from high school. She graduated from Orange County Training School. My father did not. And he and his father and brother went into business together, and so, you know, he was a self-made man.
Who was the boss of the family? Now, don't tell me you were.
No. I would say they worked together. I wouldn't say that my dad was more of an authority figure than my mom. It was more or less togetherness. My dad was the one, you know, I never rode the school bus to school. I was like Choppy Hill today. My father always drove me to school if I had to ride to school. Or I walked. You know, I either walked, I could walk to North Side, and I could walk to Lincoln. But if it was cold or raining, my daddy carried me. I never rode the school bus.
Who disciplined you?
My mother.
And who paid the bill?
Both of them.
So it really was not a matriarchal household?
No, it wasn't.
Any other
no, and it never has been. They more or less did things together. My dad was, I guess we could be considered in a broad sense the provider because he brought the food. You know, we've always lived in the same house. When they married, they built that house.
On Graham Street.
On Graham Street. So that's the only house I've ever known as a child growing up. And when I went off to college, they remodeled the house. So it's the same house. My mom was like, I guess, in charge of the groceries and the furniture. You know, if she wanted to buy furniture, she went and bought furniture. And Daddy made sure that the house note was paid and the lights were on and we had plenty of oil and whatever.
So you had central heat.
Yeah. And we had a television and those kind of things. I can remember when the first television came out and we all went over to Sears together and Daddy bought us a TV.
Now, you're describing something that is different from what I've heard from many of the other people.
That's the reason I told you, my life is might be a little bit different than what some other people may have experienced.
What about your friends? Were your friends in the same economic class that you were in? Many of them didn't have cars and they lived in houses that had wood-burning stoves and they didn't have heat in their bedrooms and they had six kids with two bedrooms kind of thing. Were your friends like this? Did you have friends like that?
Probably some. Most of my friends were right there on Graham Street. At one point, now we had a stove that was in the dining room. But we were always warm. And I would say, I was born in 47. And I would say probably by 53, by the time my brother was born in 53 or 54, we had central heat.
Did you have air conditioning?
No. We didn't have air conditioning.
Window fans?
Yeah, we had window fans. My dad was a bell. The reason I can remember the window fan so well is because my dad would sleep during the day and he'd cut the window fan on so that he wouldn't hear the noise in the house. And because he always worked at night. And because he did the carpentry work in the daytime and he did his bellhop job at night. So when he'd go to sleep, the fan would be on and that would drown out the noise in the house.
I'm going to tell you a funny story about that. So your father had two jobs.
Right. And my mom worked at the laundry. And but see, by my dad being a carpenter, you know, he could do that. Mm-hmm. And then he's always loved farming also. So there would be several little things going on. at the same time. I can remember when I got ready to go off to college, my mom had already had savings bonds coming out of her paycheck. And so they cashed in those savings bonds. And they put monies together, and that's how I went. I never had a loan. They didn't take out a loan for me to go to college. They just paid my tuition as it came up.
And you had a younger brother.
I had a younger brother.
Did he go to...
He went to Gabby Phillips. And he went to... I guess he went to... He probably went a little bit at Estes Hills. I don't remember. I'm 6 years older than he is, and I don't remember a whole lot about him. Yeah. I mean, I don't mean it at all. I don't. Not in terms of school and that kind of thing. I know he went to Phillips because when he went to Phillips was when all the riots started. He was in that group that turned Phillips out. So his story will probably be totally different from mine because, you know, he had a different experience. It was almost like we were two different children growing up in two different households because... he was so much younger than I was.
Did he go to college also?
No, he didn't. He moved away, and then he started with different jobs, and now he's working for Glaxo Welcome.
Are there other things that stand out in your mind about growing up here, like playmates and where you played? Games that you played?
We basically played, we did, on our street, there were so many children that we were all playmates. We were all like a sense of family. Now, there was a family, the Jones family, they had more children probably than anyone else. So, with all of those brothers and sisters and then I had a first cousin who lived across the street. She was the only child. And then the MacDougall children lived across the street also. And they only had two children. So with all of us together, we made up our own group. I had cousins who lived on the same side of the street, and I played with him. And then my other cousins who lived around on Craig Street, they would come up, and we would just all play. You know, it was like a neighborhood of kids growing up. We played various games, hopscotch, old red devil. We'd catch fireflies at night. We'd say, well, something we used to do, kind of, ain't no bears out tonight. Daddy done killed them all last night, something we used to do. But we basically played right there on Graham Street. We did go to, Holmes Daycare after a while. I went there for maybe 1 or 2 years. I don't remember exactly. But I went there at Hargrave Center.
So Holmes Daycare was at Hargrave?
It was at right where it is now. It's where it was when I went. The exact same location. They just gave it a new name. I mean, it may have been Holmes Daycare then, but Hargraves was not named Hargraves at that time. It was just called the Community Center. And we'd go to the Community Center for dances and parties, and we just, you know, we'd have a sock hop or something on Friday night, and we'd pay a little fee and go. And those are basically the things that we did. But because there were so many of us on that street, although there were several houses, but there were kids in all of those houses. So we just, on our street, just played and had a sense of family. It was like one big family. We were in one house and out the other one all the time.
So you knew all the parents?
We knew all the parents, all
the
kids.
Knew you.
And they knew me. One household had a piano, and we'd go over there and bang on their piano. That's sort of what we did.
What if someone in the group was misbehaving? How would that be handled?
It depends on if the parents were home, those parents would deal with it, and then they'd tell your parents when they got home, and then you'd be dealt with again.
Did they discipline you physically?
Sometimes.
The not your parents, but the other.
I mean, parents, the other parents sometimes.
Did they sometimes discipline you.
Sometimes.
If they thought you deserved it.
If they thought I deserved it.
And then did you get it again when you came home?
And I got it again when I came home. I can even remember getting the spanking at school. In the third grade, my last spanking I got at school. And it was because the substitute teacher said that I did something, said I was sassy. And so when the teacher came back to school, the teacher spanked me. And then my mom spanked me when I got home.
What was a spanking like? I've heard people say, well, today would be considered physical abuse, child mm-hmm. abuse. And then I've heard other people say, oh, it was a couple of licks with a switch on my legs.
It could be a couple. It was mostly a switch on your leg. At school, it was a ruler in your hand. And any form of physical touching of a child today is considered physical abuse. But we didn't think it was physical abuse at the time. We just thought it was a way of life. And it worked. We ended up doing what we were supposed to do. We didn't do it again. And we didn't keep repeating the same thing over and over and over and over.
So it wasn't like a 10-minute beating.
Oh, no, no.
It was like, what, a few licks?
A few licks. Sometimes it was one lick. It wouldn't take but one lick because you'd have to go out to the switch tree and break your own switch and bring it back in, and that's what they would use. And they would, that long switch would, like a little key, it was always keen on the end, so when it came across your legs the first time, you didn't want it to come back the second time, so you did what you had to do and went on about your business. And you didn't talk back. You didn't give your opinion. It's whatever the parent said, it's what you did. Or whatever Miss Jones down the street said, it's what you did.
So you got discipline, it sounds like, from many people in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get love from those people
mm-hmm.
as well? How was that manifest?
The love came that when you would go into their homes, you always felt welcome. You felt like you were at home. You didn't have a problem if you wanted something to eat, you could say, Aunt Lois, I'm hungry, or Miss Jones, I'm hungry, or Miss McDougal, I'm hungry, whatever you wanted, or Cousin Emma, I would like something to eat, may I have a glass of milk? And it was never questioned. You know, it was just like being at home. And if everybody else was sitting down eating, you got to sit down and eat. Same thing at your house. Everybody would come to your house if it was time to eat and food was being cooked. Everybody ate out of that pot of food. And so it was, everybody was always kind to one another. You didn't have a lot of, I didn't see a lot of anger, a lot of arguing, a lot of, people yelling at one another. I didn't see that. I didn't have that experience. When I was around, it was always pleasant, always loving. We'd go upstairs and sit in the middle of people's beds and talk and laugh and play games. We'd play Jack Rocks, as I said earlier, hopscotch. We did that, bat ball. We did that. Probably Jack Rocks and hopscotch was one of the things that we enjoyed most. I mean, we could play Jack Rocks and hopscotch for hours.
Skip rope?
Yeah, we did a little of that. We did more jumping rope at school, probably. Peas, pars, hot, we'd do those things, peas, pars, hot, and you'd jump, see how fast you could jump. Because usually when you were doing that, you would get, try to make the rope get hot.
Looks like you're doing it right now.
See how hot you can do it. And then we roller skate. We did a lot of roller skating, especially when I got in probably fourth or fifth grade. We roller skated all the time. Or we'd ride our bikes. One of the worst injuries I had was riding that bicycle down Robinson Street, because at that time it was a big dip in the road and I didn't hit it just right. And the handlebar hit me in the face. And but I was all right. I got over it.
Did you see much alcohol abuse in the community?
I would see some people who had been drinking. And it wasn't, you know, I know the people by name, but it wasn't like the actual people on my street, I could say. I can only think of maybe one household on my street where people would, I'd actually see them drunk, you know. And you'd see it, you know, in the neighborhood, you know, up on the corners of, you know, and various people standing around and that kind of thing. But it wasn't, I didn't get the same picture that I get today of the drug addicts and people dealing drugs on the street. It was not that same picture to me.
So you saw some alcohol abuse, but it sounds like it wasn't a lot.
It wasn't to the... To me, what I see today on the streets and what we've had to deal with on Broad Street with the drugs, and what I see on Graham Street and Whitaker Street today, it wasn't magnified like that to me. I mean, you could almost go through and name the people who I saw who were abusing alcohol. It just was not the same picture to me as that what I see today with the drugs. And it existed, but it didn't magnify like it does with the drugs to me.
Did you see much physical abuse?
I can only think of one situation where I saw physical abuse, and that same person was the same person I can visualize being abusing alcohol. I really didn't see very much physical abuse. And in this case, it wasn't that the man beat up the lady. It was that the lady beat up the man. It was the man who always ended up injured in this particular case that I'm thinking about. I never saw. If I think back, I can't ever recall seeing a man hit a woman.
Was there much separation, a single family, single parent family going on when you were growing up?
Not that I know of. Like I said, it was like the neighborhoods that I grew up in, we were all a family intact. You know, you had your parents and that kind of thing. But as I would go to school, there might be families that weren't. But I was rarely around those people except when I was at school.
Did your parents or family, grandparents, aunts, uncles talk to you about education?
Yes, it was a key thing. You didn't have a choice. Your role as a child was to study, do your best, and if you didn't understand something, it was your role to try to find out what it was you didn't understand. And they had a designated time that you did your homework. You got your homework done. My parents were very active in the PTA. If the teacher said that I did not do an assignment, then, to put it bluntly, I had hell to pay. And, you know, even though they did not go to college, they expected nothing but the best from me. It was just understood. you didn't have a choice. And it what you didn't get into, the teacher said, or the teacher didn't say, or the teacher didn't do, it was your responsibility. And I must say, my parents taught me responsibility. I remember my dad telling me when I was in about the fourth grade, because by him being flexible during the day, because he worked at night, he would say, it's time for you to learn how to cook. It's time for you to learn when mama comes home, you need to have this on the stove already cooking. And so I learned how to get in the kitchen, and if we were going to eat, I'm just pinto beans at night, then those dried beans were on the stove cooking so that when mama came in, all she had to do was finish them up. If we were going to have fried chicken that night, then I cut that chicken up and had it salted so that when mama came home, all she had to do was fry.
How old were you then?
Probably 9. I started cooking when I was about 9.